introduced to Krishna in the Bhagavatam, introduced in the sense that we saw Krishna in action for the first time. And what was he doing? He was driving the chariot of Arjuna, and he was protecting Arjuna from the weapon of the Brahmastra shot at him by Asatthama. This is the first picture we see of Krishna. It's wonderful. Krishna, Bhaktavatsa, Krishna protecting his devotee. What are the qualities that make one such a devotee that Krishna himself will protect that person, that soul? That is a wonderful meditation. And when we read the Bhagavatam, as we listen to the devotees reveal their minds in their prayers and through their activities, we learn of those qualities that make one actually a devotee. So Krishna protected Arjuna. Then what to do with this Asatam, who had killed the five, mercilessly slaughtered the five sleeping Pandava princes? What to do with this Aswatthama? Kill him, not kill him? Some of the Pandavas said kill him, some said not kill him. Krishna solved the problem by inspiring Arjuna in the method of killing him and not killing him simultaneously, thus satisfying everyone. Then Krishna, his job, the battle of Kurukshetra, was finished. He was about to leave, and suddenly Uttara Devi comes rushing towards him. Pahi, pahi mam. Protect me. Protect me. I do not care for my own safety. But there's a fiery arrow, another Brahmastra, is aimed towards the child within my womb. Pahi, pahi. Mahabaho. Mahayogin, oh greatest of mystics, protect me, protect my child. And then Krishna simultaneously with his chakra protects the Pandavas, whom the Brahmastra thrown by Asatthama was aimed towards, and it was also aimed towards the last surviving member of the Kuru dynasty, the young heir apparent who was in the womb of Uttara. So outside, Krishna was there with his chakra protecting the Pandavas, dissipating with his own chakra, with his own weapon, dissipating the fiery heat and killing power of the Brahmastra. So he was outside doing that, and yet at the same time he was inside Uttara, because he is the Paramatma. So he was also inside Uttara. And we heard a later description from the 12th chapter of the first canto, how Krishna, his club was whirling and his eyes were what? Yeah, blood red with anger. He was so angry that someone was attacking his devotees. Maharaj Prickett, who later became known as Maharaj Prickett. So Krishna also gave Maharaj Prickett a new body, because the old one had been burned. So this was wonderful. This is Krishna's wonderful dealings with his devotees. And then, after Krishna protected Arjuna from the Brahmastra, saved the Pandavas from fighting, deciding what to do, kill him, not kill him. Then, after protecting Uttara, then Krishna again sat on his chariot. He had been away from Dwarka for many months. In the whole affairs leading up to and the fighting of the Battle of Kurukshetra, he had been away from Dwarka for some time. So it was time, his mission was done, completed. So it was time for him to head back. So he was on his chariot. He was leaving. What a difference. between the time before, when before Krishna left, before Krishna was in Dwarka and then came, the Pandavas were practically, they were gathering their forces, they were coming, they had come out of exile. Krishna tried to make peace between the Pandavas and the Kauravas. To no avail, Duryodhana would not even spare. The Pandavas were very amenable to peace. Yudhisthira sent a message that, please, we are rulers, we need something to rule. You can have the kingdom, okay. No bloodshed. But just at least give us 5 villages, one for each of us. We are Kshatriyas, we have to rule something. 5 villages? Spare that for us. And Duryodhana's reply was full of malice, envy, and said, I cannot even spare the land that one could drive a pin through for you. Therefore, war had to take place. So the Pandavas had nothing, and now, what was the difference? Now, the whole kingdom, the world was theirs to rule. Before, for years, they were wandering as beggars, living incognito. And now they were the king, all the kings that conquered all the directions. What a difference. So Krishna, his mission done, was now heading back to Dwarka. Text 17. This was just after Uttara was saved. Thus saved from the radiation of the Brahmastra, Kunti, the chaste devotee of the Lord, and her 5 sons, and Draupadi, addressed Lord Krishna as he started for home. Where was his home at that time? Dwarka. So here is Prabhupada's very wonderful purport. Kunti is described here as sati, or chaste, due to her unalloyed devotion to Lord Sri Krishna. Her mind will now be expressed in the following prayers for Lord Krishna. So this is wonderful again. Especially these prayers are very famous. Prabhupada lectured on these prayers quite a lot. This is one of his most favorite lecture series. This was on the prayers of Queen Kunti. So she is going to reveal her mind. An exalted devotee will reveal them her mind. So we should try to penetrate very deeply into understanding her mentality. She's going to express her feelings, and in that, she will be expressing her mind, revealing her mind. A chaste devotee of the Lord does not look to others, namely any other living being or demigod, even for deliverance from danger. That was all along the characteristic of the whole family of the Pandavas. They knew nothing except Krishna, and therefore the Lord was also always ready to help them in all respects and in all circumstances. That is the transcendental nature of the Lord. He reciprocates the dependence of the devotee. One should not, therefore, look for help from imperfect living beings or demigods. But one should look for all help from Lord Krishna, who is competent to save his devotees. Such a chaste devotee also never asks the Lord for help. But the Lord, out of his own accord, is always anxious to render it. Now here, for the next verses, quite a few verses, up to text 43, Kunti Devi offers her prayers. So here's the first one. Please repeat. I'll read it first, then everyone will say it together. Kunti Uvacha Namashe Purusham Tvadyam Ishwaram Prakriti Param Alaksham Savabhutanam.
Alaksham Savabhutanam.
Antar Bahiravastitam. Namashe Purusham Tvadyam.
Namashe Purusham Tvadyam.
Isharam Prakriti Param. Means that Kunti Devi is bowing down or offering her obeisances. Namaste, Nama Om, Namaste. Offering of obeisances. Obeisances means bowing down. It means full respect. To whom? Krishna is leaving. She's offering her respects to Krishna. But Krishna is her nephew, her brother Vasudeva's son. So she is in such a superior position to Krishna. She's so much elder to Krishna. So what should be happening according to etiquette is Krishna should be offering respects to her. But yet, she is offering her obeisances to Krishna. Why? He is Purusham Tva Adyam. You are the Adyam Purusha. You are the original personality of Godhead. This word Purusha, if we remember the earlier chapters, chapter 7, chapter 2, chapter 3, Krishna is always called the Purna Purusha, the Parama Purusha, Ishvara Parama Krishna, Satchidananda Vigraha, Anadira Adi Govinda, Sarvakarana Karanam. Krishna is worthy of everyone offering obeisances to him because Namasye Purusham Tvadyam. Because Krishna is the original person. And why is he the original person? Because Ishvara Prakriti Param. That he is the original controller and he is beyond the material energy. If someone is beyond the material energy, and if he's original, and if he's the creator of the material energy, that means that he existed before the material energy existed. And it's due to him that everything is taking place. So such a person is now upon a chariot in front of Kunti Devi, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, having come to this earth to remove the burden of the world, is standing right before her. And she knows his position. So not only is he the Ishvara, and he's Prakriti Param, she goes on to pray, Alaksha Sava Bhutaram. Alaksha means you cannot be seen. Sava Bhutanam. By all living entities, you're invisible. Even though you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you are wandering in this world, doing things, engaging in Naralila, activities which are so parallel to those of ordinary personalities, and you are a Laksha Savabhutanam. No one can recognize who you are, although Antar Bahir Avastita. Avastita means you're existing. Krishna is standing on the chariot or possibly sitting on the chariot. And yet, he is Anta and Bahir Avastita. He's existing outside and inside of everything. The original person who is beyond Prakriti. And yet, quite astoundingly, if you think about it, that although he is inside and outside of everything, he is still Alaksha Savabhutanam. No one can see him. Prabhupada explains in his purport, sort of two-thirds of the way through the purport. Queen Kunti affirms that the Lord, although both within and without all living beings, is still invisible. The Lord is so to speak, a puzzle for the common man. Queen Kunti experienced personally that Lord Krishna was present before her. Yet, he entered within the womb of Uttara to save her embryo from the attack of Aswatthama's Brahmastra. So Kunti Devi saw that Krishna had protected the Pandavas. He was standing right before her. And he had protected the Pandavas with his chakra. And yet, he had entered within the womb. She knew that he had entered within the womb of Uttara and was the super soul and pervading everything within. So is he here, right in front of me? Or is he everywhere? Which one is the supreme? Is he both? Is he everything? Is he localized? Is he all-pervading? Very mysterious. Kunti herself was puzzled about whether Sri Krishna is all-pervasive or localized. Because this is the great mystery of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If we take a material object, say we take a piece of paper, if it is in one place, it is right here in front of me, the piece of paper. So if I rip it up into so many little pieces, I shred it, and then throw it so all the pieces are spread throughout the room, then the original paper no longer exists. So all-pervading and localized contradict each other materially. If something is all-pervading, it can't be localized. If it is everywhere, it can't be somewhere specific only. Because if it has form, form means it has a limit. It has a limit to what it is. If it has a specific form, it is not something else. It is what it is. So if something is localized, then how can it also be everywhere and everything and all-pervading? But yet Kunti saw Krishna is right in front of me, localized, yet he's inside of everything. So Prabhupada says, Kunti herself was puzzled about whether Sri Krishna is all-pervasive or localized. In fact, contradicting all material experience, not at all like the paper, which soon as it is all-pervading, it can no longer be localized, and soon as it is localized, it can no longer be all-pervading. He is both. In fact, Krishna is both. But he reserves the right of not being exposed to persons who are not surrendered souls. So unless someone is surrendered, unless someone is a devotee, unless someone loves Krishna and is fully dedicated to his service, he cannot see Krishna. He cannot understand Krishna. This checking curtain, Prabhupada actually is leading to the next verse, is called the Maya energy of the Supreme Lord. And it controls the limited vision of the rebellious soul. It is explained as follows. So Krishna is inside, he's outside, he's everywhere, he's localized, he's all-pervading, and yet, nalakcha or alakcha sava bhutanam, that no one can see him, no one recognizes him, he's everywhere and no one recognizes him. Now what is it that stops people from recognizing and knowing Krishna? Maya javanikatschanam agyadhokshajamavyayam nalakshase mudadrisha nato natyadaro yata. Maya javanika means curtain. So it is the curtain of Maya covers our vision. And when our vision is covered by Maya, although Krishna is everywhere, although he's localized, although he is the ultimate dua, the sarvakarana karanam, when one's vision is covered by the curtain of Maya, which means agya, which means ignorance, then we cannot see Krishna. Agyar hokchajam avyayam, because Krishna is beyond the range. At hokchajam, we heard that name of Krishna earlier. What bhakti yogin, bhakti yoga hokchajam, hokchaja. This is the process of removing the curtain, actually, so one can actually see Krishna. Srila Vyasadeva saw anartha upasamam shakshat bhakti yogin bhakti yoga hokchaje. By performing bhakti yoga to he who is at hokchaja, which means beyond the range of our material perception, that means that no matter how closely we look with our material capacity, no matter how we try, no matter what methodology we use, he is simply beyond our ability to perceive him because of this deluding curtaincy of maya, even though he is avyayam. Avyayam means he is irreproachable, unapproachable. He is everlasting. He is transcendental and beyond our ability to see him due to our ignorance. Due to this curtain of maya being in front of us. So this is why, although he is inside and outside of everything. Now Kunti Devi sees Krishna. And by her revealing her mind and offering her prayers, she is going to tell us the mentality of a devotee who can see Krishna. So we should listen very carefully. But yet, because he's covered by this curtain of maya, or our eyesight is covered, then nalakshase mudadrisha. Those who have mudadrisha, the vision of mudas, or foolish observers, as Prabhupada translates it here. Those who are mudadrisha have that vision, nalakshase. He is invisible to him. And now she gives a very nice example of that. Nato natyadaro yata. Just as a foolish, just as an artist, an actor in a drama, he's dressed, there's a person who's an actor. And he's dressed in a part. And a little foolish child, when watching a drama, he thinks, oh, that's Indra. Oh, that's Krishna. Oh, that's one gopi, and that's a cow. And that's a hill. That person's a hill. No! Actually, that's not. They're just playing. They're dressed up and acting in that way. But a foolish person, a person who has mudadrisha, he doesn't see who the actor actually is. So Krishna, Kunti is saying this, because Krishna has been present amongst all the people for so many days. But because of ignorance, people cannot recognize, and he's driving the chariot of Arjuna. When Krishna's driving the chariot of Arjuna, he is still the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Purusha Adhyam. He is still the Ishvara Prakriti Param. He is still the Supreme Controller. But he's playing a part. Just like an actor plays a part. So Krishna, this is called Naralila, or the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in this world. Prabhupada's translation. Why, in answer to the question, well, how is it that Krishna alaksham savabhutanam? How is it that Krishna is not recognized by anyone? He's the all-pervading Supreme Lord. How is it that no one recognizes him? The answer is maya javani katstinam. Everyone is covered by the deluding curtain of maya. Being beyond the range of limited sense perception, You are the eternal, irreproachable factor, covered by the deluding, by the curtain of the deluding energy. It's such a nice example that Kunti Devi is giving. Just like the curtain covers the actor, and no one can even see the actor when the curtain is drawn. So the curtain of Maya, of ignorance, of illusion, makes it so we cannot see Krishna. Even if he is standing right before us, we cannot see Krishna because of our ignorance. And what is our basic ignorance? We are envious of Krishna. We don't have love for Krishna. Our actual relationship with Krishna is covered. It is not lost. It is covered by so many illusory relationships. It's beginning with the body, our relationship with our bodies. Thinking that this body is me and my business is to enjoy it and squeeze as much pleasure as I can from my body, from my senses, from each of my senses. I want to squeeze pleasure for me. And this is our illusion, this is our ignorance. And because of this identification with the body, the curtain of Krishna's lila, of Krishna's actual activities, is drawn, and we are left in the dark. It is going on. It is nitya lila, but it is drawn for us. We are on the wrong side of the curtain. And instead we see darkness. You are invisible to the foolish observer. So those who are sitting in the audience imagining so many things, they are foolish observers, muda drisha, exactly as an actor dressed as a player is not recognized. I'm going to read a few segments of the purport here. Prabhupada first explains in his purport, these purports are all very wonderful, that Krishna, he appears amongst us, he performed activities, especially in Braja, he appears as so many different, in so many different incarnations, but those who are asuras, those who have a demonic mentality, they cannot recognize the Lord's authority, what is possessed. So we are all in that category. The nimical with Krishna don't want to accept our position as his servant. So then Prabhupada explains that the Shastras, so Krishna came in so many incarnations. The Shastra describes Krishna. He delivered wonderful instructions in the Upanishads, in the Bhagavad Gita. He showed marvelous capacities as a hero. He's accepted by so many great acharyas. And then Prabhupada says, and he himself says, Aham Savasya Prabhupada Mataksavam Pravatite, that I am the source of everything. Everything is coming from me. Ishwara Sava Bhutanayam, I am in everyone's heart. There is, no one else says this. So the authorities say that Krishna is the Lord. The scriptures say the person, and Krishna himself says that he's the Lord. Then Prabhupada says, and yet, there's a class of men with demoniac mentality who are always reluctant to accept the Lord as the supreme absolute truth. This is partially due to their poor fund of knowledge. So lack of knowledge of what it means. Who is God? What does it mean to be God? And partially due to their stubborn obstinacy. So that's such a nice description of our position. We lack knowledge, and we are, even if we had it, we're still stubborn and obstinate like donkeys, and therefore the word muda is the appropriate word, muda drisha. We have earned muda drisha because we are stubbornly obstinate. Such persons, stubborn obstinacy which results from various misdeeds in the past and present. Such persons cannot recognize Lord Sri Krishna even when he was present before them. So, Then Prabhupada explains a little later how kind Krishna is, in the sense that he's invisible to personalities who are not surrendered, who don't love him. He is invisible, yet for such less intelligent personalities, he allows himself to be visible. Even to mudas, he is visible in the temple as Sri Vigraha. And therefore Prabhupada explains, for such less intelligent men, there must be such things as temples, mosques, or churches, so that they may begin to recognize the authority of the Lord and hear about him from authorities in such holy places. So it's very interesting also to note that there is the Lord in the temple, and then ordinary people who don't have the ability to see Krishna due to the curtain of Maya being tightly drawn over their eyes. Such people can come to a temple and see the Lord and offer obeisances and hear about him. This is the meaning. This is the business of a temple, to provide this facility. The deity and the hearing shastra. Everyone, because everyone, if people were intelligent, they wouldn't be in the material world, they would be in the spiritual world. So that means everyone is less intelligent because there is identification with the body. So for less intelligent people, this beginning of spiritual life is essential, and only foolish men decry the establishment of such places of worship, which are required to raise the standard of spiritual attributes for the mass of people. For less intelligent persons, bowing down before the authority of the Lord, as generally done in the temples, mosques, or churches, is as beneficial as it is for the advanced devotee to meditate upon him by active service. That's also an interesting line. Prabhupada is making the point that it is so just for a more advanced devotee, he's doing active service. And that is so beneficial for him. But for one who is less advanced, it is simply so beneficial to come in and just offer obeisances to the deity. And it's also, Prabhupada uses the phrase, for the advanced devotee to meditate upon him by active service. What does that mean? Meditate upon him by active service. That means our active service, whatever it is, whether it's cooking or cleaning or deity worship or collecting or whatever it is that we're doing, should be done as a meditation upon him, as his service. That's for the advanced devotee. That everything is done as an offering to him. Text 20. So here, so Kunti, therefore, First, she offers her obeisances to this wonderful Krishna. Even though that Krishna is her nephew, superficially, but he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But yet, although he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he's invisible to everyone. And why is he invisible? Because the curtain of Maya is covering everyone's eyes due to their ignorance. And therefore he can't be recognized, just like an actor isn't recognized by the foolish audience. Don't recognize his actual identity. Then the next verse, Tata Paramahamsanam Uninamam Alabmanam Bhakti Yoga Vadarnatam Katam Pashemahistriyam Tata. Beside the less intelligent people, the ones who have mudadrisha, here are some others. There is the Paramahamsas, the advanced transcendentalists. And then, Muninam, Amala Atmanam. The Munis, the great sages, whose Atma is Amal. who are pure-hearted and therefore and are not entangled in material life, who can fully distinguish between the body and the self. Muninam, the sages, Amalapmanam, who are pure in heart, who can fully distinguish between the body and the self, matter and spirit. So there are the foolish people, then there are the Paramhamsas, and these great sages who don't identify with a body. So Bhakti Yoga Vidhanartam. So you have come to inculcate devotional service to these exalted personalities. Because devotional service is actually for the most exalted personality. And then Kunti Devi very humbly says, Katam Pashema Histriya. But what about us? We are just, I'm just a less intelligent woman, Stria. So you are coming, they're the foolish people, and you are coming to give devotional service to the most exalted personality, but what about common people like me? How will we ever advance? So she's teaching us through her own humble submissions. She's teaching us the right mentality, and then she's going to explain how Katam Pashema Histriya, how can we, who are not very advanced, see Krishna and understand Him? Prabhupada's translation. You yourself descend to propagate the transcendental science of devotional service into the hearts of the advanced transcendentalists and mental speculators. That's the Muninam Amalatmanam, those who are jnanis, who know the difference between the soul and the body, who are purified by being able to discriminate between matter and spirit. How then can we women know you perfectly? How is it possible for us to know you? Prabhupada's purport. Even the greatest philosophical speculator, she's actually speaking somewhat sarcastically in this prayer. Even the greatest philosophical speculators cannot have access to the region of the Lord, because the munis, just being able to discriminate between matter and spirit, they actually can't find Krishna. They could go on speculating for hundreds and thousands and millions of years, but that ability does not give them the ability to know Krishna, to see Him, because this seeing and knowing Krishna is very, 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 very rare. And even millions of manushinam sahasreshu kastidyatati sadaye, even though they are millions of perfected beings in this way, still that is not a sufficient qualification. So the philosophical speculators cannot have access to the region of the Lord. This is actually also described in the very, very interesting in the second canto of the Bhagavatam. The second canto of the Bhagavatam is philosophical, and there's technical things about the universe, but it is so interesting how the yogis describes. Sutta Goswami describes how the yogis, at the last days of their life, after practicing yoga, they can leave their bodies through the different practices of pranayama, etc., pratyahara, etc., dharan, dhyan, samadhi. They can eventually leave their bodies. And then when they're out of their bodies, in their subtle body, they can travel anywhere. They can go sightseeing throughout the universe. Or, if they are serious, if they are devotees, they can, it describes the process of travel through the sunbeams and being passed from one demigod to the next demigod, going higher and higher and higher throughout the universe, and finally, after much subtle and very technical abilities exhibited, they get to Brahmaloka. And then, basically, they have to wait till the universe is finished, and then they can transfer themselves, still get more purified and become more subtle, and transfer themselves to Goloka. And then Prabhupada explains in his purport. And you can get the same thing just by chanting Hare Krishna. And that's actually the conclusion of that whole section. And then finally, I think it's actually Sukadeva by that time, or maybe Sutta Tata. Keep track of who's speaking then, but then he says, Akama Sava Kama Va Moksha Kama Udaradi Tivena Bhakti Yogena. Yajetara Purusha Para. Again, this Purusha. You worship the Purusha, Krishna, and you'll be free. That's actually the conclusion. So, even the greatest philosophical speculators can have access to the region of the Lord. It is said in the Upanishads that the Supreme Truth, the Absolute Personality of Godhead, is beyond the range of the thinking power of the greatest philosopher. He is unknowable by great learning or by the greatest brain. He is knowable only by one who has his mercy. Others may go on thinking about him for years together, yet he is unknowable. This very fact is corroborated by the queen, who is playing the part of an innocent woman. Women in general are unable to speculate like philosophers, but they are blessed by the Lord because they believe at once in the superiority and almightiness of the Lord. And thus they offer obeisances without reservation. The Lord is so kind that he does not show special favor only to one who is a great philosopher. He knows the sincerity of purpose. For this reason only, women generally assemble in great number in any sort of religious function. In every country and in every sect of religion, it appears that the women are more interested than the men. This simplicity of acceptance of the Lord's authority is more effective than showy, insincere religious fervor. So Kunti Devi is teaching us the actual way to see the Lord. A natural and simple and pure acceptance that He is the Lord and I am tiny and insignificant. How then can we women know you perfectly? Now the answer to that, or rather the clue to that, how anyone can know Krishna perfectly, is given in the next verse. Krishnaya Vasudevaya Devakinandanaya cha Nanda Gopakumaraya Govindaya Namo Nama. Krishna, let me therefore, how can we know you perfectly? Let me therefore offer my respectful obeisances unto the Lord, who has become the son of Vasudev, Krishnaya, unto the Lord Vasudevaya, unto the Lord Krishna, who is the son of Vasudev. The pleasure of Devaki, Devaki Nandanaya, the boy of Nanda, Nanda Gopa Kumaraya, and the other cowherd men of Vrindavan, and Govindaya, the enlivener of the cows and the senses. So all these names of Krishna, there's Krishnaya, it's Krishna, Vasudevaya, the son of Vasudev, Devaki Nandanaya, the son of the pleasure of Devaki, Nanda Gopa Kumaraya, the boy of Nanda, and the other cowherd men of Vrindavan, and Govindaya. These five names are all in relationship. They tell of Krishna and his relationship, the Absolute Truth's relationship to his beloved devotees. Because not only through bhakti can one see Krishna by accepting one's position and relationship with Krishna, that he is great and I am tiny, not only and I should serve him. Not only can one see Krishna, but so much more intimacy with the Supreme Personality of Godhead is available. As these names all show, that Krishna can be the son of Vasudev, the pleasure of Devaki, the pleasure, the cowherd boy of Vrindavan, and the pleasure, the one who favors the cows and the land and the brahmanas, Govinda. Here is Prabhupada's purport. Now listen to this carefully. It is very nice and not even that long. The Lord, being thus unapproachable by any material assets, even that one sentence is so important, that we can all think of our material assets. I mean, I don't mean just how much money we have in our bank account. Whatever abilities we have, whatever strengths we have, character, whatever beauty we have, whatever intelligence we have, whatever good qualities we have. But regardless of these assets, none of them is sufficient to approach Krishna. He is approachable by something completely other than that. There's nothing that we have that we can give to Krishna that will allow us, that will buy us the ticket into Krishna's presence and make the curtain of Maya rise. Except bhakti. But there's no material asset. But when those material assets that we have are used for Krishna's pleasure with devotion, when they become permeated with bhakti, then anything is wonderful. Anything is acceptable because it's the bhakti. The Lord, being thus unapproachable by any material assets, out of unbounded and causeless mercy, descends on the earth as He is in order to show His special mercy upon His unalloyed devotees and to diminish the upsurges of the demoniac persons. Pritranaya sadhanam vinishaya tadaskritam. Queen Kunti specifically adores the incarnation of descent of Lord Krishna above all other incarnations, because in this particular incarnation he is more approachable. In the Rama incarnation he remained a king's son from his very childhood. But in the incarnation of Krishna, although he was the son of a king, he at once left the shelter of his real father and mother, King Vasudeva and Queen Devaki, just after his appearance, and went to the lap of Yasoda Mayi to play the part of an ordinary cowherd boy in the blessed Brajabhumi, which is very sanctified because of his childhood pastimes. Therefore, Lord Krishna is more merciful than Lord Ram. He was undoubtedly very kind to Kunti's brother Vasudeva and the family. Had he not become the son of Vasudeva and Devaki, Queen Kunti could not claim him to be her nephew and thus address Krishna in parental affection. But Nanda and Yasoda are more fortunate because they can relish the Lord's childhood pastimes, which are more attractive than all other pastimes. There is no parallel to his childhood pastimes as exhibited in Brajabhumi, which are the prototypes of his eternal affairs in the original Krishna Loka, described as the Chintamani Dham in the Brahma Samhita. Lord Sri Krishna descended himself at Brajabhumi with all his transcendental entourage and paraphernalia. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore confirmed that no one is as fortunate as the residents of Brajabhumi, and specifically the cowherd girls who dedicated their everything for the satisfaction of the Lord. His pastimes with Nanda and Yasoda, and his pastimes with the cowherd men, and especially with the cowherd boys and the cows, have caused him to be known as Govinda. Lord Krishna's Govinda is more inclined to the Brahmins and the cows, indicating thereby that human prosperity depends more on these two items, namely Brahminical culture and cow protection. Lord Krishna is never satisfied where these are lacking. So Kunti Devi is giving her a hint. How can one know Krishna perfectly? She's calling Krishna, oh, Krishnaya Vasudevaya Devakinan, always in relationship to his devotees. That means by becoming a devotee of Krishna, every person can know him perfectly. Because every person, regardless of their material situation, is a soul. And when the soul's bhakti, the natural energy of the soul, the natural loving relationship with Krishna is evoked, then we can know Krishna. And Prabhupada is also hinting in this verse at what to know Krishna perfectly is. Okay. Any questions? Thank you. Any comments? No. That is love for Krishna. So when we get that bhakti, evoke that bhakti, then we love Krishna. Then we can love Krishna. Did I derail your question?
Well, I was just wondering how do you...
Yeah, now that's something. In the beginning it's an eighth of a percent of our motivation, the love for Krishna, and there's so much satisfaction that we get out of it, and our own purposes are being served by it, is the remaining percent. So as we become purified and more transcendentally situated, the part that we're doing it simply for Krishna's pleasure increases. It's very hard in Kali Yuga to know what love is, because lust is so much mixed and taken as love. But actually love for Krishna is simply acting for Krishna's pleasure. So this has actually been described very briefly in this verse. The cowherd girls who dedicated their everything for the satisfaction of the Lord. The residents of Vrindavan, the exalted devotees, their pleasure is simply Krishna's pleasure. When Krishna is pleased, they are pleased. We take it more the other way. We want Krishna to be pleased when we're happy. So therefore his job is to make us happy for his own good. Does that answer your question?
Yes, right.
So we're actually a long distance from bhakti. But not so long. But it's long. We're getting closer. And Krishna can make that distance practically vanish if we are sincere and if he so chooses. It's infinitely long. And in fact, it's so long that there's nothing we can do to traverse that distance. But as soon as Krishna wants to be merciful, we're there, basically.
Is it possible to... I always wanted to ask this question.
Well, here's your chance.
Is it possible to think that you're serious, but Krishna knows that you're not?
And probably everyone else does too.
That probably came out wrong.
Yeah, okay, do you want to try it? That was your chance too. Sorry, no second chances.
Well, like, you think that you're serious to engage in devotional service. I want to know, deep within you, part of you don't even know about is like doesn't want to really know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. We have a really deep aversion to serving Krishna. In youth, you noticed?
Yeah.
But so, we want to do it, but when the price comes up a little bit, we tend to say, excuse me, I have to go for a few. I'll be right back, don't worry. As long as things go the way we want and our pleasure is being met, then we tend to be, we're fair weather devotees. You know that expression? Is there that a fair weather friend? You ever heard that expression? It means you're someone's friend when the weather's good. When the weather turns bad, you have other things to do. When it suits us. But of course, that's not devotion. But that's much better than nothing. Because when you come, when one comes to Krishna with whatever one little one has, Krishna will take that and purify us. If we take one step to Him, He will take thousands and thousands to us. So when in the beginning, one tends to notice one's great sincerity. And then later on, gradually one notices more one's great insincerity. So it feels like you're going backwards rather than forwards in some ways. But actually you're coming to grips. What happens is you come to grips with actually how dependent you are on Krishna's mercy, and that's better. First we think Krishna needs me. Maybe. Is that right?
Yeah.
Is that the question that you wanted to ask?
Yeah, that's the one.
And we should chant Hare Krishna. There are different effects of chanting Hare Krishna. One is Cheto Darpana Marjanam, means that the selfishness is cleansed, and it's compared to a mirror. The heart or the consciousness is compared to a mirror. So as one's heart or the mirror is cleansed, the mirror of one's heart is cleansed, one can see oneself more clearly. Any other? Yeah.
The mood here of Kunti and Arjuna as well, really, is what their knowledge of Krishna's position. So it's different from like the residents of Vrindavan.
And that will be explained later in her prayers, too. And also the queens of Hastinapur in the 11th chapter. Yes.
Oh, our question was that all of the tail associates of the world. How is their position different?
From each other?
Between like those ladies who are in knowledge like this and...
Yeah, and there's Vrindavan, there's Mathura, there's Dwarka. And the residents of Vrindavan, their knowledge of Krishna is overwhelmed by the intimacy of their relationship with Krishna. So it's not that they don't have the knowledge of who Krishna is, but it's overwhelmed by that. Because if they were always consciously aware of, it's like Devaki and Vasudev. So they understood who Krishna was because their relationship with Krishna was in Mathura. So therefore they had to be very respectful of him. Now how could they? We just observed Damodarmas. Mother Yasoda, that's glorifying how powerful her bhakti is, that she was chastising Krishna. So Mother Devaki and Mother Vasudeva were offering Krishna prayers. They couldn't chastise him. So the parental, the aspect of the parental love was weakened by that. While Mother Yasoda's was unlimitedly blossoming.
It's very hard to appreciate how if they have this knowledge, they can still be the element of Vatsalya or Sakya in their...
It comes, it goes.
Like that.
But everything is hard to conceive of from our position, because we have muda drisha, and we're just It's like the curtain is drawn and we can't see beyond it. And someone comes from behind stage, which is basically what Shastra is, and great acharyas like Srila Prabhupada and our great acharyas, and they're saying, behind the stage, this is going on and this is going on, and you're trying to imagine it, but you've never seen beyond this, behind the stage before, so it's like the jackfruit, taste of the jackfruit is like drinking sugar cane juice through a Muslim's beard. You don't exactly quite get the picture. When you go to Bangladesh, you make sure you have some jackfruit. I think at that time it is kacha. Yes, it is kacha then? You can still have it though, as sabji? Any other? Yes. What was he thinking you want me to say? You mean doing or what? In the last verse, there's a little reference to this, to the answer to your question. And that verse, that's text 44. The Lord, thus hearing the prayers, this is after the prayers of Kunti Devi, composed in choice words for his glorification, mildly smiled. That smile was enchanting as his mystic power. So he smiled mildly, and he was leaving. He still was going to leave. Krishna is very, very, very grave. When Lord Brahma, after stealing the cows and the boys, he was afraid. And then he came back and he understood who Krishna was. And then he offered prayers. And those prayers are some of the most important verses of the Bhagavatam. And Krishna answered him in just a few. No, actually, was it Indra that Krishna answered?
He didn't say anything
to Brahma. And to Indra he said a few things. Don't do this again. Chalo. Cha. Bah. Not quite that crude, but to Indra he said a few things. To Brahma he didn't say anything. And to Kunti Devi he mildly smiled. But that mild smiling was not just ordinary, it was enchanting. So she was enchanted by his mild smiling. Everything was included in that.
So what is that?
One, I could tell you better, I could tell you what he wasn't doing.